from Portland, Oregon, this is the Jewish Review Podcast. I'm Rockney Roll. Coming up this episode, Hanukkah starts this weekend, and that means festive fried delicacies, latkes, sufganiyot, and so much more. But this isn't a reality for many families in our area because they don't have enough to eat at this time of year, at any time of year. To dive into the problem of food insecurity in the Jewish community, I spoke with Susan Greenberg, the Executive Director of Jewish Family and Child Service here in Portland, as well as Kennedy Pate, JFCS's Grants and Development Specialist and their Intake and Resources Coordinator. We looked at how food insecurity in Jewish communities has evolved, what can be done to address the problem, and how different issues addressed by agencies like JFCS interconnect. Stay with us. The Jewish Review Podcast is brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland. Hanukkah is almost here, so check out all of the celebrations around town at the Federation's Hanukkah Happenings page, online at jewishportland.org/Hanukkah Happenings 25, link in the episode notes. Now let's hear from Kennedy Pate and Susan Greenberg. Susan Greenberg, Kennedy Pate, welcome to the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So tell me about your Jewish journey, each of you.
My Jewish journey started in youth when I was born. My parents were very engaged in their temple. My dad was president of the temple. My mother was president of B'nai B'rith Women. They were always engaged. Volunteering was the way they gave back to the community. My dad was a school teacher. My mom was a housewife. So their way of giving back was volunteering. And my dad started the food bank in South Bend, Indiana at their temple. So circling to what we're talking about today, it's very meaningful to me in that way as well, because it was so important to my parents as well. In terms of my journey in Portland, I moved here 37 years ago in December, and our connection started in the Jewish community, actually randomly through programs that the Federation had for young couples and young adults. So there you go.
And it's just grown from there. Kennedy, how about you?
My Jewish journey started, I guess, just a little under a year and a half ago when I moved from Tulsa, Oklahoma to Portland, Oregon, and started working for Jewish Family and Child Service. I have family here in the Portland area. My uncle David is Jewish, and he is in an interfaith household. So he and my aunt are raising their children Jewish. So throughout this year and a half that I've been with Jewish Family and Child Service, I have gotten to learn more about Jewish culture, not only through my work, but by being close to my aunt and uncle. I got to do Passover with them this past year, and that was my first experience. And my uncle David was very welcoming, and it was just a really great experience of getting to be with them and my family and getting to learn about, you know, why they practice in this, why they love it so much. So that would be my Jewish journey.
That's really beautiful. So speaking of working with JFCS, tell me, in broad strokes, what does Jewish Family and Child Service do here in Portland?
Well, Jewish Family and Child Service has several components. We have our Holocaust Survivor Program, where we support Holocaust survivors in the community with home care and personal care, as well as case management. And we support around 100 survivors that way. We also have a behavioral health program that we're expanding. You know, and Kennedy can speak to this one, and because this is so much of what she does for JFCS, information and referral, community support services, where we're supporting people that, exactly what we're talking about today, in terms of people that might be struggling with mental health, food insecurity, housing insecurity. So Kennedy is the one that is helping find resources for them. And Kennedy, I would love for you to expand on that.
Yeah, so like Susan said, I do information and referral. My goal is that if somebody calls in, they get to speak to a real person and share their story and what's going on. And from there, I kind of take the information that I have. I do research through a really great program called Connect Oregon and just kind of find resources in the community that will help them in their situation of what they're needing, whether it is, you know, rental assistance, utilities assistance, food assistance. I try to stay up to date with the latest resources as much as possible. I recently attended a nonprofit connection conference with CSN, which is Community Support Network here in Oregon, and I met up with a lot of really great other nonprofits that gave me really good information about what they do. Got a lot of information from nonprofits that I hadn't heard of, and I have a really great resource book that I utilize that's available for staff as well. But the most important thing is just making sure that when people call JFCS, they get to speak to somebody and share what they're going through and have somebody hear, you know, what they need and get that support that they need.
Yeah. So I think one of the most common misconceptions about Jewish community is that Jews are universally wealthy. And not only do we have the research data that proves that that is not the case, but in your work, you both see it firsthand. What does that look like from a boots-on-the-ground perspective?
I think, one, I want to highlight that we have a diverse group of people that reach out to JFCS. Mm-hmm. But I think what it means is that, you know, we're a diverse community in general. When you look at holistically, the city of Portland, Washington County, Clackamas County, and people go through things in their lives that impact their situations at a certain time. You know, someone could lose a job, you know, and they think that they're stable, and all of a sudden their savings disappear and they need our support. And that's not uncommon. We're looking at a time where we're going to see the impact of health insurance going up, that people are going to, one, not be able to afford their doctor's appointments or their mental health support because of the changes to health insurance. And we all need to look at that and come together as a community to see how we can help individuals that are either struggling now or to be struggling in the near future. But JFCS is there. And, you know, one of the things that I think is important in terms of what, again, the informational referral piece is finding a place for individuals. It may not be at JFCS. It may be somewhere else where they can find the support they need.
Kennedy, you, like you said, you answer the phone and hear a lot of this firsthand. What does hardship in Jewish community look like from your perspective?
I think from my perspective, like Susan said, some folks are just put in a situation that they didn't anticipate happening. And we see it everywhere. An unexpected medical bill, a family member that, you know, needs more care that they can no longer afford to care for. They need support for these moments of life where it just happened unplanned, or they are in a situation where, you know, they've been trying to get help and they've reached out to several other organizations and nobody's calling them back. They're not able to speak to anybody, or they're, you know, just looking for someone to actually put in the research and give them the resources of where they're going to find support. From a community perspective, anybody could go through a time where they need assistance. It's not subjective based on your income or subjective based on, you know, where you've been living and what you've been doing in life. Anybody could hit hardship. So I would say that it's been really impactful being able to support anybody who calls in and needs that help, regardless of what happened, regardless of if this has been a long time need or it's a short term need.
I can speak personally. My mother, who needed personal care, and for about a month, it was 24/7 personal care. And the cost of that has really impacted my mom in terms of what savings she has left. Mm-hmm. And so it is, I mean, I see it personally that you have one thing happen in your life where you need extra support and it becomes very difficult.
Yeah, things can really cascade in those kind of situations.
That's right.
And we see a lot of times, at least from my perspective, when I take people's calls, they're so focused a lot of times on this one thing, and they actually need more than just that one thing. It's just everything's kind of piling up. So I do love that when I speak with people, I have the opportunity to hear their story, find out what their focus is on, and get them that assistance, but also have the opportunity to check in and say, well, what other resources that aren't maybe at the top of your list that we can also get you some help with? Because when you ask that question, you find that a lot of people go, you're right, I also need help here. And I'm so overwhelmed with this one thing. Thank you for asking, because I could use assistance with food or with a support group or counseling, you know? So. Yeah.
And I have to imagine that in a world where increasingly if you call a phone number, you're going to get a voicemail or an automated menu, that somebody that's in a jam like that is dialing a phone number and they're getting a person on the other end, somebody that can actually connect with them.
Yeah, it can be really impactful for somebody, especially when they've been calling or they've called 211 and feel like they just got an automated response, or they've done the research and they just need a little bit of extra help because they can't distinguish what's going to be the best option for them. So I do my very best to answer every call that comes through, but I always call back. I always reach back out if they happen to, you know, have to leave a voicemail. But that has been one thing that I get a lot of feedback on is, thank you for answering my call and speaking with me. It's really great to talk to a person.
Yeah, because I get frustrated enough when I call FedEx and get a robot, and that's not even really a crisis. That's just me being annoyed with FedEx. Shout out to FedEx if they're listening.
Well, you know, something I want to amplify that I didn't before, Kennedy speaks to a lot of people that are feeling isolated and alone, and we do have support for seniors that are feeling that way in terms of we have socialization activities every month. We have one coming up in December, a happy hour at Lycum Brewery. But, you know, we're in our own way working on helping seniors feel less isolated out there and alone. But we know it's bigger than seniors. You know, we have goals out there to be more impactful in the greater population.
Yeah. So this is the 25th anniversary, if I recall correctly, of JFCS's Thanksgiving Food Box program. Thanksgiving doesn't seem like the most Jewish of holidays off the top of my head, but clearly this work of providing these meals over Thanksgiving is really important and really impactful to mm-hmm. the people that receive them. What does the community effort that goes into this look like?
Well, I know it starts out with communicating with multiple organizations, synagogues, and I don't want to list them because I'm afraid I'm going to forget somebody. And so I don't want to do that. But we are connected to, it's really a community event mm-hmm. where a good many of our organizations are connected and they're collecting. Maybe it's the filling for pumpkin pies, or maybe it's cans of sweet potatoes, cans of corn, the side dishes for a Thanksgiving meal. And then we're fortunate enough to have, and Kennedy's other side gig at JFCS's grant giving. And we reach out to stores like Safeway and Whole Food to request grants for turkeys. So this year, I think we received, Kennedy, you can speak to the numbers much better than I can.
Like Susan said, we're very fortunate with grants and in-kind donations. So Safeway this year gave us $5,000 to purchase the food that we put into the box. And then Whole Foods donated 25 kosher turkeys for us, which we estimated was about a $1,600 in-kind donation. Kroger gives us $1,000 to help support purchasing of those gift cards that our clients receive. But like Susan said, it really is about community partnerships, and I'm forgetting one, so I'm going to circle back and make sure I touch base on Windermere as well, because Windermere mm-hmm. Foundation gave us $3,000, and they were very kind. CBI's Social Action Committee gave us, I believe, $2,500. Mm-hmm. So community partnerships and grants are really what help ensure that these families get a Thanksgiving meal during this time, and we are so, so very grateful.
Yeah. And, you know, with Thanksgiving, I would say it's a universal holiday in the United States. And you don't want individuals to miss out on a holiday because they don't have the resources themselves to do it. It's an interesting question. At Passover time, we also do, and federations help support that by doing the fundraising for Passover for All, focused on our Holocaust survivors. And we work with individuals who have been doing it for, I don't know, 30 years or so, in the Jewish community, and they also have individuals they provide Passover meals to. So we do it a couple of times a year in one way or another. And the other piece to this that makes it really important is in terms of the day of and the packing of the food, we have volunteers that help pack the foods that go out to the volunteers who are driving to the 160 family units that we provided food boxes to this year. And it really does take a village, and people really feel honored to be part of the community to provide the food boxes. And I also want to clarify that we partnered with William Temple House this year, too. So we expanded outside of the Jewish community to help support individuals.
We gave 10 boxes to William Temple House for their clients, and then we gave 10 boxes to Congregation Neve Shalom.
So one of the things I want to come back to is that GFCS makes a point, clearly, to provide kosher turkeys for those families that are keeping kosher, which mm-hmm. is, you know, very kind and very respectful and very, very much in Jewish tradition, but also a pretty big lift because, as we all know, kosher meat's not cheap.
Right. Yeah, we were so fortunate to Whole Foods this year who helped support that. They supported us last year with 100 pumpkin pies, and this year we needed more kosher turkeys than we have before. So we asked them for that, and it was a resounding yes. They immediately were like, absolutely, we can help with that. So William Temple House partnered with us, and their team helped pick those turkeys up in their van and drove them to the MJCC for us. And then their team stayed and helped package boxes. It was really great to have that partnership with them and their support. It's an amazing opportunity to be able to provide families with their dietary restrictions and needs. We do the kosher boxes, but we also have families that are vegetarian that we keep the turkey out, or they're gluten-free, so we get gluten-free items for them. So we want every family to be able to have an enjoyable holiday without having to worry about how they're going to make it work.
Yeah, and it's delivered to them, so nobody has to schlep across town or stand in line or be like out and noticeably like, nobody has to advertise, I am in need, I need a food box. It's brought to them, which is kind and also very discreet in a way I'm sure is appreciated.
The other thing that I want to also comment on, we had 160 that we delivered, but we also sent out gift cards to those people that maybe didn't want us to deliver a Thanksgiving meal, but they wanted to be able to purchase their own food. Mm-hmm. So with the donations that we received, we were able to purchase and send out, again, I'm going to count on Kennedy, but I think it was 40.
Yeah, I think in total, we sent out 201 gift cards. So 160 of those were with the boxes. So yeah, it would be around 40, 41 gift cards that went out to those who just needed a gift card. And a lot of those folks are just, I want to appreciate that they're mindful, because sometimes they are like, it's just me for Thanksgiving, so I don't need a full meal. I'd rather a family of five get that full meal. So it's just really great to be able to give them something to help support them, even if it's not the food box.
Yeah.
So that actually leads quite nicely into my next question. What does food insecurity look like in the Jewish community in 2025?
I think across the board, we're seeing grocery prices go up exponentially. We are hearing that cost of living is going up. This year, there was, if we're talking Thanksgiving, I think there was an increase in what it would cost to purchase an entire Thanksgiving meal. So food insecurity, for some people, it looks like I need to pay my electric bill or I need to purchase groceries this month. And so for any community and the Jewish community as well, it might not be that these folks need a whole lot of support, but they need that extra $25, $50 because this month they have a higher bill or their grocery bill went up by so much money. And JFCS has just been really fortunate that we had the Federation give us those gift cards. We got, was it $5,000, Susan?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I want to, if you're okay if I add something to that, Kennedy,
Yeah. The
reason why was because there was a delay in SNAP benefits.
Yes.
And so that also impacted, you know, the greater community and the Jewish community. And we were receiving phone calls from people. And because of a donor through the Jewish Federation, we were able to support individuals that were struggling and didn't receive their SNAP benefits immediately. And I mean, we also recognize that this is not solving the problem. It may help, you know, for a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
The food gift cards, but for one or two grocery shops, it's helping these individuals get through a moment in time. But it's a bigger issue than the Jewish community. And again, I think it's something that we all need to look at and see how we as a Jewish community can help support people with the food insecurity.
Yeah, I remember when I was doing the reporting, speaking with both of you on the story about those gift cards during the delay in SNAP benefits during the federal government shutdown, the thing that really came home for me was that, like, that $50, for some folks, that's the difference between eating and not eating.
Right.
It doesn't seem like much to maybe us, but there are people, that's everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, people with young families and struggles, it's very impactful.
Yeah. So how have the dynamics of food insecurity and addressing food insecurity from a social service perspective changed in recent years? And I'm specifically thinking of some of the things you mentioned earlier, Susan, with healthcare costs going up, yes, and thinking particularly in Portland, housing affordability has been a huge issue in this area. And on top of food prices going up, everything else seems to be really squeezing in.
I feel like I don't want to forget about COVID and the impact and people being home and not being able to work and the impact of that. So, I mean, we've had a cycle of this and it was very impactful. And I think we still have the remnants of the COVID world in terms of economics. Some people haven't caught up or gotten out of it. Mm-hmm. But I think we're coming into a period of unknown where we don't know where we're heading because of certain dynamics with, like I said earlier, the cost of healthcare for, you know, individuals that are maybe their incomes are, they can get through and they can afford groceries and they have a mortgage, but all of a sudden their health insurance goes up or they lose their benefits and they're going to the emergency room instead of their doctor's office because they can't afford their insurance. And therefore, there's a cascading effect of not being able to afford getting groceries because, you know, here I am, I can't afford my healthcare, I have an emergency, I need to go to the ER. Or here I am, I'm having issues, you know, one way, you know, losing my job and I can't afford my rent anymore. And that's happening here. People that have been comfortable for a long time, all of a sudden they're going through their savings and, you know, they're hitting a spot that they would never expect to hit in their lives.
How does an agency like JFCS adapt and change or increase perhaps what it's doing to address what is, I think, pretty fair to say, a growing issue?
Well, I do think that it's not just up to us. And one of the things that we're doing is partnering with other organizations out there. So if we don't have the answers, maybe they have those particular resources that we don't, that we get those people to those places where there's more support. We may have it ourselves. Mental health, you know, behavioral health, we have therapists that are available. But, you know, in other ways, there's other organizations that do, you know, have a bigger food pantry. Get them to the food pantries out there. You know, have a real connection with other organizations to really make a difference, an impact.
And that's where folks like Kennedy come in. So thank you for that very much. So what is it? We're coming toward, we just got through Thanksgiving. We're coming towards Hanukkah. There are other holidays that people celebrate this time of year, of course. What is it about the quote unquote holiday season that really brings these kind of issues and this kind of work into focus?
I would say we get calls. I mean, and we have another program called Family to Family, mm-hmm, where we do a small campaign, you know, and raise some funds to support families with gift cards so that they can provide gifts for their family members so they don't feel like they're left out again of a holiday. Maybe they can get toys for their kids. Maybe it's having a latkes on a day, you know, day they're going into the grocery store and buying groceries. But it's not a lot, but it's something so that people can still feel like they're part of the holiday. And, you know, this is a time of year where we look at, you know, it's lights and in many different cultures. You know, if we're going to in an upbeat way, maybe we can look at we're doing something in the community to help bring light to individuals that might have some darkness.
The holiday season for a lot of people is unfortunately, kind of, it can be isolating if they live far away from their families. So having our socialization events like our Hanukkah happy hour and our Holabake for the Holocaust survivors can give them that sense of community around the holidays that they might be missing if their family doesn't live in the Portland area. So just sense of community around this time is so important, and being able to provide them with that is really great.
Absolutely. So since it is Hanukkah, last question for both of you. Applesauce or sour cream on your latkes?
Sour cream.
Sour cream.
Sour. Oh, right. We've got a consensus around sour cream, I suppose. Well, I'll make sure I've got some stocked in the fridge. I want to thank you both for your time and your work, and wish you a happy Hanukkah all around. Susan Greenberg, Kennedy Pate, thank you so much for joining us in the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you, Rocky. Have a good day.
That's all for this episode of the Jewish Review Podcast. Thank you so much to Susan Greenberg and Kennedy Pate for taking the time to share their work and its impact. You can read about how JFCS, the Federation, the Oregon Board of Rabbis, and one particularly generous donor work together to help families affected by the federal shutdown-induced SNAP benefit lapse in the November 19th edition of the Jewish Review, online at jewishportland.org/jewishreview. You can learn more about JFCS's work in Portland at jfcs-portland.org. Links to both of those in the episode notes. If you like this episode, please leave a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice to help others find our show. Click subscribe to get our latest episodes, and tell a friend. If you really want to show your support, your gift to the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland's annual campaign for community needs makes this podcast, our community newspaper, and so much of the work we cover possible. Learn more and make your contribution today at jewishportland.org/give. In anticipation of latke-induced laziness and a post-Sifkaniyot slumber, the Jewish Review Podcast will be on winter vacation through the end of 2025, with bi-weekly episodes resuming Wednesday, January 14th. If you're looking for something to listen to along with your menorah-lit fried food festivities, check out some of our back episodes covering subjects ranging from groundbreaking medical work in Ethiopia to the joy of Hanukkah pajamas. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions, please reach out by email to editor@jewishportland.org. The Jewish Review Podcast is a production of the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland. Our associate editor is Karon Blau-Rothstein. Assistant editor is Rachel Nelson. Special thanks to Daniel Berger. Our theme music is by Isaac Joel. I'm Rockney Roll. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, Hag Hanukkah Sameach, Happy New Year, and all the best.